This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to a two-year low. There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping could take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam, and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How's things?
I'm going very well, thank you. Look, before we start the show, we've got a small favour to ask. We're coming to the end of the financial year and taking stock of where we're at. Through our stats, we know we've got one of the highest listen-through rates in the industry. Now we're on a drive to grow our listener numbers. So if you know one person who is intelligent, curious about the world, with a good sense of humour, then please tell them about us or tag them in one of our socials posts. That would really help us out. And if you're here because someone told you about it, then welcome. As always, big show coming up. Let's get into it. I hope you're not a data hater, because we've got lots of wages and labour data coming at you. Normally I'd pronounce it data, obviously, but I couldn't find anything to rhyme with data. Except farter, but that's not the kind of humour we're about on this show. We're far too highbrow for fart jokes. Oh, excuse me. Anyway, moving on. Did you eat your Wheaties this morning? Well, I hope you enjoyed them, because we're entering a wheat shortage. Will Aussie kids really have to become kale smoothie kids instead? No more Big Macs for Russia. After McDonald's gave it the big net, the company is putting an end to its business in Russia after 30 years. Plus, we've got more of your listener questions coming up a little later in the show. But first, Thomas, I cast my vote weeks ago, so I actually forgot it was on. But apparently there was an election last weekend. What did you make of the federal election?
Yeah, I had a wonderful time. It was good. Yeah. I always enjoy staying up and watching the count come in.
Really?
Yeah, it's fascinating, I find.
I was at the swimming. I went to the Australian National Swimming Championships. It was on in Adelaide.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Horses for courses, I suppose.
Yeah, so interesting results, I reckon. I mean, yeah, epic results, well covered in the paper. But the thing that jumps out for me is that I reckon what we're looking at is a disruption of two-party politics. Like, if you think about politics as an industry, it's run by a duopoly. The duopolies controlled market share for generations. But now it's getting disrupted, and you've got these sort of incomers cutting their turf. And so the way I sort of see it, so, you know, Warren Buffett talks about moats. Moats are these things that protect a company's business, a company's market share from competitors. I reckon the two major parties had four moats, and those moats have steadily been eroding over the last few years, and then really collapsed with this election.
What were the moats?
Well, the four moats are people. First one's people. So they used to control a lot of people, had a lot of volunteers, but membership of the major parties has been dwindling quickly in recent years. They're having more and more trouble turning out voters to election booths and these sort of things. So, yeah, so they're not controlling people the way they used to. On the flip side, social media has made gathering a large number of people for a campaign, particularly for an independent campaign, if you have an inspiring candidate, it's much easier for them to mobilize a large number of people. So controlling people is not the moat that it used to be. The second one is media power. So the Murdoch press ran hard behind the coalition, but they're still very much in the two-party model, the mainstream media. Like, you think about the leaders' debate. So Labor won with 33% of the popular vote, or of the primary vote. Coalition didn't do much better. So the leaders' debate is two people who control at most 60% of the vote.
Mm.
Like it's kind of it's a bit redundant to talk about, you know, the leaders debate, because there's a lot of other players that are just as relevant.
In the US, don't they have a lot more people in the leaders debate, like in the run up to the presidential election. I think they have, yeah, I remember seeing debates of like 10 people, or is that just to pick the leader of the party?
That's to pick the candidate, yeah. So the Republican primaries and
Yeah,
so
right.
that's to pick the candidate for each party. Yeah.
Right.
So media, like you used to have for the smaller parties, it was much harder to get your message out because the media were the gatekeepers of it. And if you weren't coming from a major party, then they treated you as irrelevant and you didn't get any airtime. So the collapse of sort of the mainstream media business model and the rise of sort of the internet and then social media has meant that traditional media is not as important as it used to be, not even close. So you can really run a successful campaign entirely through social media, which I think, you know, most of the independents that got up, that's what they were using, social media.
Mm.
So that used to be a moat in favor of the two parties. That's not a thing anymore. The third moat is money. So they used to get a lot of donations. They're very well funded, still very well funded. But the Teal independents in Sydney and Melbourne, they were very well funded as well, and they were able to tap private donors. The Climate 200 Fund got behind them as well, but you know they were going dollar for dollar with the major parties through the election, through the campaign in those seats.
Is that though they got the Australia 200? That was what's his name? Holmes Accord.
Holmes Accord. Yeah.
Yeah. He still had to fund it though. Like it still required like a billionaire to come along and sponsor the independent.
It definitely helped, but I think he was saying that he only funded a third of the teal candidate. So two thirds came from the community or from other donors. So he was instrumental, but he wasn't the sum of it. Like there was significant other money involved as well.
I had never heard teal before Saturday night.
I was at
a Port Power game. I'd never heard teal as a political party colour. And they're independents, right?
Yeah.
And there's a teal wave all of a sudden. I was getting hit by a teal wave. I'd never even heard of the colour before.
You hadn't heard it before Saturday?
No.
Yeah, right. Nice rock you live under.
It seemed to me though, and this is my casual observation, it seemed to me that a lot of this teal wave was women as well. It seems like there was a strong shift towards more women coming into the political landscape than, you know, the old boys club that seemed to exist up until now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the polling, like the Liberal vote with women collapsed with the Brittany Higgins allegations when they came when they came to light. Like the female vote collapsed, and the way it was, the allegation itself, but then also the way it was handled is sort of like there's a lot of analysis saying that. Really on the nose with female voters.
So a lot of the successful candidates, and that was across, in my electorate in Boothby, we had two women on from Labor and Liberal who are running as well. It seems like there's definitely a push to get more women involved in politics and more representation. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great stories to come out of it, I think.
Mm. And it's not only the end of the sausage fest in Parliament. 50% of votes were either pre-polling or postal votes. So it seems like the sausage fest on election day might soon be finished too.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. Oh. I'm childish. I wanted to get the phrase sausage fest in there. It's once every 4 years, people. Relax. who knows? Maybe the next election we might even have a voting day. Like, what? I don't get why it has to happen on one day. I still don't understand. Mm. We might, who knows? We might be able to vote using a computer soon, using this new thing called the internet. Who knows? It's a brave new world we're heading into, Thomas. All right.
Anyway, the last moat.
No, we didn't get to the fourth moat. Sorry.
No, you weren't even paying attention, were you? The fourth moat is brand. So used to, you know, the Labor brand or the Liberal brand, it used to convey, you know, had all these brand associations, and across the country you knew what you were getting if you're voting for the Labor candidate.
Mm.
That doesn't help anymore because you know, that's what really the Liberal Party really struggled with, is you have the demands of your inner city populations, and you're trying to balance those with the demands of your regional populations, and they want entirely different things. And, you know, the Liberal Party seemed to make that strategic choice that they were going to stick with their more regional sort of righter wing policies, and the inner cities really turned on them.
Right.
And so the brand doesn't really help you. And that's kind of, I think, just a general trend anyway, that people want customization. They want things made specifically for them. They want their product tailored to them. They're not willing to just accept whatever the brand has to offer. Like the parallel I keep thinking of with this is like when Virgin came in and disrupted Qantas. So then Qantas, like, okay, people want cheaper flights. Well, Qantas isn't about cheap. That we can't dilute the brand that way. So we'll just launch an entirely new company and call it Jetstar.
Yeah.
And that Jetstar offers the cheap things. So the Liberal Party needed to do something like that. They needed to launch their inner city Liberal or whatever that would be.
Couldn't they have just got rid of the Nationals?
Yeah. Well, no, but they had to make that choice. Mm. Yeah. It was an impossible choice. You lost one or the other because they just wanted different things.
Yeah, right.
So in business, like, Liberals would have launched inner Liberal or teal Liberal or something and then try to keep the whole show together.
Liberal light.
Liberal light, yeah.
All right, Thomas, you know I loves me some data. The wage and labour data was out last week. What did we learn?
Jobs data continues to outperform. It's came in a stellar unemployment rate down to 3.9%. That's a 48-year low.
Right.
It's the lowest level since 1974. Yeah, so that's going great guns.
Did we have our highest level of unemployment in 1974?
Sorry, lowest level.
Lowest level, sorry. That seems like a strange era to have low unemployment.
1974?
Yeah, that was like...
You weren't around.
No, I know. No, but historically looking back, like, there's like, it was like, you know, the kind of surfy era, the hippie era, like, it seemed like there would have been a lot of people who were unemployed during that time.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really. Well, they probably weren't looking for work. That's the thing. If you're not looking for work, a hippie in a combi going for a surf.
Right.
I don't count the, yeah. But yeah, unemployment was below 2% through the 60s and 70s.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, that was Australia back then. Just
did
anyone
they have
who
COVID
wanted a
back
job
then, or was that?
No.
No. No. What the? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then boomers like to complain about how hard they had it. Yeah, so good result. The number of unemployed now is down to just 537,000 people. So, without a job officially.
Right.
That's down from 700,000 just before COVID hit. And, yeah, according to the ABS job ads, there's 400,000 open job ads. So, yeah, 400,000 open positions, 537,000 unemployed. So,
wow.
Like, pretty balanced. Yeah, so it's pretty.
Why don't we just give them all a job?
Yeah. Well, they got to be in the right match, yeah, in the right industries and things. But people are talking about, like, this is about as good as it gets. The unemployment rate, like, can't, you know, maybe we get down to 3.5, maybe a touch below that, but it's like hard to see it really going lower than that.
Have foreign workers come back yet? Are they coming back?
No. Immigration's still negative.
Right.
We're still losing population. So that's down from, you know, that's 200,000 to 300,000 since the Howard era. Immigration's been running at that level. So that's obviously that's having an impact, keeping the unemployment rate lower than it would be. But
right.
But even with that, it's still the jobs market's still looking pretty strong.
I keep reading it's seasonally adjusted, this data. Like, what does that mean? Do some people only like to work in summer?
Yeah. there's some seasonal factors. There's sort of like a mathematical equation that sort of looks at what happens in different months and then tries to smooth it out. Like, you know, Christmas time, there's a lot of people who, you know, that has an impact on, like, retail sales. There's a big impact on retail sales in Christmas. Mm. So you're trying to, like, smooth that out. So that's what seasonally adjusted means.
Right.
You try to strip out the seasonal factors. They might not be that big. Like, I don't know if they're that huge in the labour market.
Yeah, right.
The really interesting thing in the week. So while the...
Here we go. Sorry, I thought we'd peaked. I didn't know where we'd go from seasonally adjusted, trimming the, smoothing out the Christmas rush. I thought, We haven't even got to the interesting bit yet. Okay. Hit me.
So while the job starter is really hot, wages, we got wages as well. Mm. We got wages on the Wednesday. That came in much weaker than expected. Not much, but substantially weaker than expected. People thought it might pop. We might see a lot of wage price pressure. It didn't happen. We got 0.7 in the March quarter, 2.4% over the year.
This is wages growth, yeah? So this is what we're talking about? Yeah. Like it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So how quickly wages are increasing?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so 2.4% over the year. Mm. Pretty underwhelming.
It's not enough.
I mean... Not enough. Well, it literally is not enough. So, yeah, when with inflation running at 5.1%, you can take inflation away from wage price growth and you get real wage growth. Mm. So the growth in purchasing power, 2.4 minus 5.1 is 2.7. So real wages have fallen by 2.7% over the past year. So your ability to go out and buy stuff, that's now 2.7% lower than it was a year ago. That's the biggest fall in over 20 years because inflation is quite high at the moment, relatively. Yeah, so real wages are going backwards and they're going to keep going backwards. People saying like, well, that's not a great outcome. Mm. I mean, yeah, it's interesting in that sense, like real wages are going down. So that hurts consumers. That's sort of not great for households. They're going to have to sort of dig more into their discretionary spending to sort of meet their essentials, that sort of thing. So, yeah, households are going backwards is what that means.
Mm.
But the real big thing, though, is that, I don't know if you remember, so like since late last year through most of this year, the RBA was saying that they were going to wait until they saw wage price pressure. Like, so they're looking for – they put a number on it too. They said wage price index are above 3%, 3 to 4% before they would raise rates, because until they got that, they weren't confident that they'd get inflation in the 2 to 3% target band. So they said they were going to wait for that 3+%. Then they surprised us last month with a rate hike, even though we hadn't seen that wage data. But what they said in the minutes is said, we know we said we would wait for the wage data, but we've been talking to a lot of businesses and businesses are telling us that wages are definitely going up, so we guess we're just going to pull the trigger.
And we've been talking to a lot of businesses, and this time we're going to listen. This time we're actually, we dropped the ball on interest rates, so now we're heeding the warning, and they're gonna do something about it.
But it now looks like they were, initially they're going to wait for this release of the wage price index, but they just pulled the trigger early. But now it's come out and said, and it kind of says, oh, we probably should have just waited, actually, because wages aren't growing, anywhere near what we were worried about.
Right.
So it looks like the RBA has jumped the gun, which then means that all the market economists are now ratcheting back their expectations for rate hikes through the year. So whereas they were expecting them to hike rates aggressively and quickly because inflation data came in hotter than expected, now wages data has come in softer than expected. So now they're like, well, maybe it's not going to rise so quickly or it's not going to get so high.
Hang on, I'm confused. So why does – so the RBA doesn't want wage growth?
No, they do. They want it in the 3 to 4%. They say – so they, remember, they have an inflation target. They're trying to get inflation in a 2 to 3% target band.
They say
for that to happen, in wages needs to be running at 3 to 4%.
Right. Yeah.
They want to see wages growing in a 3 to 4% target band as well, effectively.
Yeah.
What they were worried about in April when they hiked rates was that, that it was actually running hotter than that and they were behind the curve.
Right.
Sorry, in the May meeting. So they were worried that they were behind the curve and they needed to get out in front of the curve.
Right.
And they're like, we believe that wages are where we want them to be, so now we're going to start winding things back.
So they were just guessing. They didn't know. They didn't have the data. That is kind of...
We like to call it forecasting.
You call it what you want. It's guessing. They're just guessing at where wages were and they kind of got it wrong. So now it's not panicked. Can they influence wages at all, the RBA?
No.
Like they raise interest rates to cool inflation. Can they do anything to... raise or lower wages growth?
I mean, effectively, to the extent that lowering wages lowering interest rates stimulates the entire economy, and then as the economy gets stimulated, wages growth picks up because there's so much economic activity. To that extent, it has an impact, but it's not direct, no.
That doesn't work anyway, does it? Because if you lower rates, then inflation grows because there's more money.
Yeah. This is the balance.
That's why economics is hard.
Yeah. That's
right. I've been at it 3 minutes. I'm already painted myself into a corner. All right, why don't we take a quick break here, grab a word from this week's sponsor. On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking about skyrocketing wheat prices as well as McDonald's plans to leave Russia. Back with more on Comedian versus Economist right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. Of course, you can send us an email, cve@equitymates.com, or via the website, equitymates.com/CVE. And you can also get us on Instagram and Facebook at CVE Podcast. Thomas, India is banning wheat exports. What's going on there?
Yeah, this is a bit of a grim story. Yeah, so India is banning wheat exports. So India is the world's second largest producer of wheat. But they've had a heat wave that's probably sort of been pretty brutal, and it's apparently knocked 10% of wheat production out of the harvest is going to be 10% smaller.
Right.
So that's creating a bit of a big drama. Wheat prices were already up thanks to the war in Ukraine. Remember, Ukraine and Russia together account for 25% of wheat exports. So wheat prices have been soaring. Wheat prices are now up 62%. Whoa. From where they were at the start of the year. So that's a big jump. Yeah, so but the Indian government's worried that it's getting out of hand, that wheat price inflation is going to hurt local consumers. So they're not going to be able to afford food. That's going to create dramas. And to try and keep a lid on prices, they've banned product exports, so they're not going to export any wheat.
Are we angry at that India is hogging all the wheat, or are we okay?
Well, personally, I mean...
It's not good sharing, as I tell my children.
No. I mean, they're doing the right thing. So they're allowing for when there's letters of credit and there's contracts that have been signed, they're allowing those to go through. They're also taking requests from countries that are trying to meet their food security needs. So if people genuinely need it, then they're open to that. But they are trying to sort of limit how much they're shipping around and look after the local population.
Hmm.
I mean, the interesting thing is that it all ties in with this sort of growing theme of a food crisis seems to be brewing.
Heard a bit about this.
So UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was saying that shortages related to the Ukraine could tip tens of millions of people over the edge into food insecurity, leading to malnutrition, mass hunger and famine, and a crisis that could last for years. The U.S. Secretary of State says it's the greatest global food security crisis of our time. The Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey is saying it's apocalyptic. Pretty serious.
Is it just a problem for developing countries, or is this like a food crisis that's going to hit the rest of the Western world, rest of the developed world?
I don't think it's going to touch us. Like, Australia is food sovereign, so we should be okay. But that said, you look at the structure of the food crisis, it's a bunch of things feeding into each other. So you had the pandemic and then all the supply chain disruptions from that. You had a lot of the labor force knocked out with COVID, so they weren't able to do that. And then you had a lot of extreme weather events like the heat wave in India. And then you've also got rising oil prices from Ukraine. So that, well, the war in Ukraine has restricted supply like for commodities like wheat. But the spike in oil prices also then feeds through into fertilizer. And fertilizer prices are through the roof at the moment too. And that's where it can start to impact developed countries like Australia, is if we're using a lot of fertilizer, then we can really struggle with that.
Right. So we're, so what you're saying, we're food sovereign, but only if we can get the things we need to grow the food.
To make the food. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That seems a pretty precarious situation. But I don't know that I've been walking around spruiking how food sovereign we are.
we rely on oil prices to sort of drive our tractors and fertilizer to make it happen. So yeah, like it does affect us. I don't. No one in Australia is talking about it becoming a crisis, but
right.
It's probably where it's probably going to hurt is more in your middle income countries. Yeah, that's sort of where they're saying, like, you know, they're saying fertilizer is going to have a big impact on Brazil. Brazil uses a lot of fertilizer.
Right.
And the other thing with the middle income countries is that they're pretty fragile at the moment anyway, because they've just been through COVID. A lot of middle income countries ran strong social programs through COVID. So there's a lot of income support, a lot of health support, and they spent a lot of money and went into a lot of debt to sort of ride out the COVID wave. But that means that they're not, the cupboard's bare, like they don't have anything to fight a food crisis with. They've run out of money basically.
Right.
And so, so one risk report was saying that the countries to watch in this are Egypt and Brazil, Argentina, Tunisia, Pakistan and the Philippines. Like they're your middle income countries that are probably going to...
Argentina, sorry.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Argentina's got a lot of problems. Yeah. So
I'll just correct you wherever I can. It's a sport for me.
Thanks. Yeah. Good catch. Yeah. So that's going on. And the other part of it is though, so we do have these agencies, like the World Bank has food programs. And so far they've spent $30 billion trying to support countries get the food they need.
Mm.
But they're buying wheat and food at market prices. So as prices go up, they're not able to, you know, they're able to buy less and support countries less and less. So, yeah, that's where it
gets. Wow. So we've got an oil crisis and a food crisis. So we've got energy and food. we're struggling with the world over the next little while. If you're looking for good news on this show, sorry to tell you, you're not going to find too much of it. Most importantly, though, is Weet-Bix going to be okay? Because that's that was my COVID plan. Everyone went out and bought toilet paper. I just bought like 10 boxes of Weet-Bix. That was...
Yeah. Built yourself a fort. Yeah.
That's right. That's what I built my COVID bunker out of, just boxes of Weet-Bix. All right, Thomas, big news. McDonald's has made the decision to leave Russia. What's going on there?
Yeah, so McDonald's is joining a long list of companies now that's backing the political sanctions on Russia. So we've had sort of state-sponsored sanctions through US and Europe.
Mm.
But companies are joining in as well. They're sort of bailing on Russia. So about 350 companies now at last count. Scaled down or bailed on Russia altogether. And just big companies like Amazon, Apple, Volkswagen, Toyota, Samsung.
Right.
Bumble. Bumble's out.
Bumble? What's that? Oh, the dating app.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm so out of touch. I didn't even know what Bumble is. Yeah. Well, I do, it turns out. I'm sorry, Anna, if you're listening. I don't know why I know what it is. But I have no good explanation for that. Right, Russia. Yeah. Russia's getting pretty dire situation there. I saw it. Russia announced it was allowing over 40s to join the army. So it's kind of interesting. Really? They're getting a bit desperate. Apparently, in a further move, between now and when the last McDonald's store closes, every Happy Meal comes with a family conscription voucher for the whole family to join the army. So that'll be fun. I think the last store has actually closed now, if I'm not mistaken.
30 years McDonald's were there. And then
I saw people have started stockpiling McDonald's before the last one shut. There's this guy who's like, he took a photo of his fridge and he's got like 50 cheeseburgers, McDonald's cheeseburgers in his fridge.
Wow, it's probably a black market for them.
Well, I think they're just selling them online. People have been loading up.
Oh, really?
Waiting for,
oh my God.
Things are bad when you're buying used McDonald's Happy Meals. The toy's already been made. There's a bite out of your kid's burger. A meal with two burgers, two drinks and a cherry pie was being sold for about $84 Australian on online. Which you talk about your depreciating assets. Yeah. That's not from the time you list to the time the auction closes, that's going to be significantly less valuable.
Yeah, no, they should have made it an NFT.
I did read too, though, McDonald's isn't actually removing the restaurants. They said it's a process that they call de-arching. So they're not actually getting rid of, like, the bricks and mortar and everything, Wankers. The restaurant that existed. They're leaving all that there. They're just de-arching, which, you know, the golden arches, right? So,
right.
So, like, the cookers and the fryers and the drinks machine, whatever, are still staying behind. So,
right. So they'll come back at some point.
Well, no, they said they're permanently moving out. Like, initially they announced, I think it was temporary, but now they've said, nah, that's it, we're out, which creates an incredible opportunity for someone to finally set up a McDowell's chain in Russia, a la Coming to America from the movie from the 80s. I think he had the golden axe, didn't he? He's like, yeah, it's just a direct McDonald's ripoff. So I think this is go time for McDowell's. But you got to wonder, like, who cares if McDonald's, like, I get there's a general kind of, you know, it's bad that all these Western companies are leaving. But I wondered, like, what would be the impact if McDonald's left Australia? Do you reckon that would have serious ramifications, or do you reckon we'd all just go, nah, I kind of miss the Big Mac every now and then? I don't eat it very often, so I don't know whether it's a big thing or not. But I'd like to think as a society in Australia, we'd adjust fairly quickly to McDonald's leaving.
Hope so, wouldn't you? Yeah. You'd want to hope so.
Yeah. Like, it's not a staple. Like, we can deal with a global wheat shortage, but don't you dare touch my McNuggets or there'll be trouble. There'd be job losses. That's the big one, obviously.
I was gonna say, like, a lot of people say that McDonald's is really a property business. That McDonald's buys properties in sweet locations, and that's the real heart of the business.
So they're just a property investment firm. They're just sitting on, like, increasing land value, right?
Yeah. Which is what that when they say with the de-arching process tells me that they're hanging on to the land.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Anyway, they're getting out of Russia, so we'll see how that plays out. In any case, the burgers are better at Hungry Vlad's. All right. That does us for this week. Thank you once again for tuning in. Don't forget, tell someone you know that you're enjoying the show. Tell them if you think they might enjoy it. We'd really love for you to do that for us. And don't forget to check out all the other great podcasts from Equity Mates Media. Get Started Investing, Equity Mates Investing Podcast, You're in Good Company, Talk Money to Me, Crypto Curious, and The Dive. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back with more next week on Comedian versus Economist. Bye for now.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.